We will have the Friday wrap of the economic week that was, of course. And then, at the end of the show, we'll take a trip to Cape Cod. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Friday today, the 30th day of July. Good as always to have you along, everybody. It has been a week in this economy, in case you hadn't noticed. The Fed met, gross domestic product came out. So much to talk about, so little time, so let's go. Neela Richardson is at ADP. Brian Chung is at Yahoo Finance. Hey, you two.
Hi, Kai. Hey, Kai.
So, Neela, let me start with you, and we're going to spend a little bit of time with Chair Powell and the Federal Reserve this afternoon. The first thing I want to talk about is Powell saying in literally these words, we're not going to raise rates. Well, he didn't say we're not going to raise rates. He said we will continue to be accommodative with our policy until we see substantial further progress. Those are his words toward their goals. How much longer do you believe that is going to take? And we're talking lower unemployment and you know, inflation under control.
The great thing about defining substantial further progress is that it's a moving definition. And that's exactly how the Fed likes. It's not just Powell. It's just how Fed chairs talk, is to give themselves maximum wiggle room to define what progress is as we continue down this path. I think they've met their inflation objective. We're well over the 2% target. And so they have to use another word, transitory, to explain where we are in terms of progress. But in terms of employment, I'm struck by what the Fed said, that we still have some ways to go, some ground to cover, I believe was the exact phrasing. And we do. About 7 million people are still sidelined by the pandemic. And those are the people who tend to be overly concentrated in low-pay service sector jobs. So the economy still has quite a bit of work to do to produce the further progress needed for the Fed's second mandate, which is full employment.
Brian, I thought it was interesting, and Neela gave this a nod. Powell was actually asked what he means, and I think it's the first time he's been asked, what he means by the word transitory. And he said, not that it's going to go away and everything's going to be back to normal. He said, you know, it's just inflation's going to pause kind of where it is, and it's not going to get worse. And I thought that was worthy of note.
Yeah, and I was in that press conference. It's really interesting to see the Fed chairman kind of jumble up his words when he was describing that, because let's be honest here, right? For the millions and the majority of Americans that don't spend their time trying to figure out the differences between inflation and price levels, it is a complicated topic to address, because inflation measures year over year changes. There are these things like base effects when you're trying to measure current months against the depths of the pandemic a year ago where prices actually declined. So what he was trying to message to people was that when the Fed says they feel inflation is going to be transitory, that doesn't mean that if you see something on the shelf that's $12 today, it was $10 before the pandemic, that transitory means the price will go back down to 10 or even lower than that. What it means is that they just want to make sure inflation is at trend and that the slope of that price level change is not running away from them, which, again, very difficult thing to try to communicate to the general public.
Yeah, for sure. And I will bet you there are millions of people out there who have been hearing Powell and us and everybody else say transitory and have thought, yeah, it's just going to go back to normal. And that clearly is not what the chairman meant. Neela, I want to ask you about something else Powell said, and it was in response to how long it's going to take. And Drew, let's hit that piece of tape.
We're clearly on a path to a very strong labor market with high participation, low unemployment, high employment, wages moving up across the spectrum. That's the path that we're on, and it shouldn't take that long in macroeconomic time to get there.
Macroeconomic time, it evoked to me something like Paleolithic and, you know, Precambrian, and those eras were just long, and I don't know. What do you think?
Well, Kai, that's a new one on me, to be honest. But I'm just going to go back to the Great Recession. It was a real recession, not a pandemic-driven downturn. And so I think that's a good comparison for macroeconomic time, because it took a full 3 years before we saw the unemployment rate drop below 8%. And we reached that marker pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But this is not like a typical recession. So the word's clearly on a path to this kind of strong performance in the labor market, I think is yet to be seen as we look at some of the soft barriers around working. Yes, there's high job openings, which Powell referred to, but we still have a lot of unemployed folks out there. So what is the reason for the mismatch? Is it transitory like the price increases, yeah, or is something structural amiss that has changed the complexion of the labor market? We still don't know precisely for sure how strong that labor market progress will be. We'll see next week, but that's something to keep an eye on.
Wait, sorry, super quick. When you say soft barriers to employment, do you mean stuff like the virus and childcare and kids not being in school and that kind of thing?
Yeah, and I don't mean to relate the soft barrier
to the virus
because that's been
hard
stuff. Yeah. But absolutely, childcare, having reliable full-time childcare has been a big barrier for some workers. Right. And so we got to make sure that's in place as the school year starts to really see a fulsome recovery.
Gotcha. Okay. Brian, changing gears, gross domestic product for the second quarter, our first look at it came out 6.5% below what people were expecting. But a lot of the coverage was, you know, the economy is back to where it was in sheer numerical terms before the recession. But the catch is, we're not really recovered, right?
No, not at all. And I think that when we talk about the GDP print, we have to acknowledge that obviously that's a whole separate measure of where an economy is. Employment and GDP prints are not going to necessarily tell the same story. We know the disparate impact specifically on low income people of color in terms of the impact of this specific pandemic. But when it comes to GDP, at least on that front, it looks like things are pretty good. So goods and services consumption return, interesting to see a big shift towards services that actually had a 5% contribution to the change in real GDP. But there were some weights on there. As you mentioned, it missed the street's estimates. They were expecting something like 8.4%. One big reason was because of imports that actually had a negative 1% drag on that top line. Yeah. And then inventories as well, which does underscore the supply chain bottlenecks and suggest that maybe people would have been consuming more if simply there were more products out there to consume with those bottlenecks.
So, Neela, we've got a story from Sabri and another one from Matt Levin on what the Delta variant might do. But let me just have in literally like 10 seconds, are you worried or not worried about the Delta variant in the economy?
Not worried about a national shutdown in the same way that we saw last year. I do think there is cause for concern about an episodic or short-lived regional retrenchment in the reopening that could dampen some of the labor market momentum that we've seen to date.
Brian, same deal. 10 seconds, go.
I think so. I mean, when we talk about just broadly what's been going on, I think that, you know, the economy is definitely it's in motion right now. Right. And I think that when we take a look at the numbers next week, it'll really give us a better idea of what's going on.
Fair enough. Brian Chung, Yahoo Finance, and Neela Richardson at ADP. Thanks, you two.
Thank you, Kai.
Thanks, Kai.
Have a great weekend. On Wall Street today, mostly red, but, you know, not remarkably so. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, so one other thing, as I was talking about right at the end there with Brian and Neela, one other thing that Powell said that we wanted to dig into, he said, in essence, every new wave of the virus has had less and less of an economic impact. And while one certainly does hope that's true with this new wave, one is also obliged in this business to report it out. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore has the big picture look at a recovery, perhaps, we don't know, maybe at risk.
We can't understand the economy without understanding the virus, and this variant is a hard one to figure out. But here are some things we're learning. First, it's far more contagious than the original. Second, you can get it and spread it even if you're vaccinated. But it is really unlikely to cause serious illness for vaccinated people.
I think the real concern is unvaccinated ones.
Milena Izmirlieva is head of life sciences research at IHS Market.
It's so emerging evidence still, but it all seems to be pointing in the direction of potentially slightly higher severity of disease in people who are unvaccinated.
So there are two ways this could slow the economy. Governments could restrict consumers, again, or consumers could restrict themselves. Gad Levinon is an economist with the Conference Board.
People in general will be a little more hesitant to go out and about and spend.
Particularly older people, he says, who spend disproportionately on certain industries. Think cruises, for example. Some local governments have introduced mask mandates, but so far, not much more than that. Michelle Meyer is head of U.S. economics at Bank of America.
I really think of this more as a speed bump than a permanent destruction of growth.
Largely because a decent number of people are fully vaccinated, around 56% of those aged 12 and up. Samuel Scarpino directs pathogen surveillance at the Rockefeller Foundation. He says, we're still learning about Delta, but we do know one thing for sure.
The vaccines are still highly effective at preventing severe disease and death, even against the Delta variant.
So the vaccines are as important for the economy as they are for people's health. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
All right, if that was the economic and epidemiological macro, there is a micro version of the Delta variant story to do as well. In a lot of places, workers have been trickling back into their offices since the beginning of the summer, a handful of hybrid employees at a time. In New York, for instance, the occupancy rate for commercial office space in the second quarter was double what it was in Q1. Downtowns were actually starting to feel a little bit like downtowns again, and then Delta came along. And Google and Lyft, Indeed, and Apple are just some of the companies that have pushed back their back-to-the-office plans. Twitter reopened for 2 weeks and then shut down again. And here's the catch. All of those companies and thousands of other companies making similar decisions all across the country are surrounded by businesses that depend on people actually coming to work. Marketplace's Matt Levin has that one.
Real estate lawyer Steve McDonald has been in the Flood building near downtown San Francisco for 30 years. He loves his suite of offices there.
I'm attached to the place because I designed it and, you know, I got the fancy tapestries and fireplaces and stuff like that.
Which is why at a meeting yesterday, his law partners approached him very delicately.
And they were kind of sensitively asking me, well, Steve, how do you feel about giving up the whole place?
When we talked to McDonald a few months ago, he was still trying to sublet his extra office space. Now he's okay giving it up and the $23,000 a month in rent.
It's gotten, you know, much less likely that we would return to 2019 normalcy.
Lori Albert is worried about that, too. She covers the New York market for commercial real estate company Cushman & Wakefield.
You know, I hope that it doesn't go back to what it was a year ago because, you know, it was things were progressing and momentum was building. And hopefully that will continue to be the theme.
Jay Howells has gotten pretty used to revolving office reopening dates. They manage Coffee Cultures, just a block from Twitter's San Francisco headquarters. The company may expand its food menu to lure more local residents, but Howe says those tweeps
have the money to spend on their daily cup of coffee and pastry, so our business will do a lot better with that help.
In the meantime, Howe's doesn't have to compete with the free gourmet coffee at Twitter. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
All right, inflation now in a behavioral economics kind of way. Procter & Gamble reported earnings this morning, made plenty of money, of course. But the company said its costs are going up, which means the prices P&G charges you and me are going up too, September probably. General Mills and Kimberly-Clark have said essentially the same thing. But consumers are only going to pay so much for stuff before they cut back or start looking for cheaper alternatives. And the challenge, as Marketplace's Mariel Segarra reports, is working out exactly what that price point is.
Yeah, prices are going up on everything. And Sarah Jowett in California has noticed. Like, it costs more to go out to dinner.
You definitely have this idea in your head. You know, I'm going to go to this restaurant, and it's generally this amount for us. But I generally get the same things. I'm kind of boring that way.
So she's been cutting back, skipping the soda or the bigger entree. But the key here is that she knew prices went up.
A lot of this is driven by, do people notice?
Mark Bergen is a marketing professor at the University of Minnesota's Carlson School of Management.
Anything essential that we frequently purchase, we notice a lot.
But for one-time purchases or splurges, he says people pay less attention to price. Now, if someone needs an item, like diapers or laundry detergent, they probably won't forego it altogether. But they can look for substitutes. Tim Smith is CEO of the consulting firm Wiglaf Pricing.
The biggest issue that matters is how close is the substitute? What is my alternative to buying that product?
How people respond to price hikes depends on something else, too. How financially secure do they feel? That's about their finances, but also their expectations. Colorado resident Misette Florissant is cutting back on whatever she can right now.
Almost every aspect of the economy just seems like it's kind of slipping away from our fingers, whether that's buying a house or looking for a new rental property or just day-to-day purchases.
With prices rising and her salary stagnant, she's nervous about the future. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
We have a podcast. We have a podcast. We have a podcast. We have a podcast. Download it if you miss us on the air. Coming up.
It's a golden rule. You're always open 7 days a week.
Yeah, not so golden right now, it turns out. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial is down 149 today, about 0.4%, closed at 34,935. The NASDAQ down 105.7%, 14,672. The S&P 500 shed 23 points, about 0.5%, 43.95. For the 5 days gone by, the Dow gave back 0.3%. The NASDAQ slipped 0.1%. The S&P 500 off 0.3%. Amazon dropped 7.5% today because late yesterday, the online retailer posted worse than expected quarterly revenue for the first time in 3 years. Also issued weak guidance for the third quarter. Bond prices went up. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note down to 1.22%. Why do I keep hammering the 10-year? I keep hammering the 10-year because that's where the economy's going, right? It's not worried about inflation. It's worried about growth, people. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. This has been, as I've been harping on all week, a week of measurements in this economy. And those measurements can give you some really good insights into the inner workings of this economy. The report on durable goods the other day is a great example. The number of unfilled orders for durable goods was up in June for the fifth month in a row, a statistical manifestation of all the port congestion and supply chain delays you have been hearing about. But maybe things are loosening up. Gretchen Blau is our customs broker friend at Logistics Plus. She is in Erie, Pennsylvania.
We're seeing a lot more shipments going into ports that we haven't used much in the past. We're seeing a lot in Vancouver, in Portland. New York has always been busy, and it still continues to be busy. It's not as crowded as L.A. Our CEO sent us an email with a picture outside the Port of L.A. On Monday morning that basically had 31 ships stacked up ready to unload. It's not only, you know, the ships trying to get in, it's the unloading, it's the chassis, it's the truckers. There just isn't enough manpower to get the containers unloaded once they're here and then move them out of the port in an efficient manner. Trucking's kind of at a premium where it, you know, we're paying above normal prices to actually get the trucks to go into the port if there is availability. The companies here in the U.S. that import different goods, they all understand, oh, yeah, the supply chain's all messed up right now. It's kind of a, you know, roll your eyes and just deal with it type of thing at this point. The Section 301 tariffs are still around, and everyone's just kind of accepted that fact for a little while. No one likes them, but, you know, it's something that's being accepted, and people are definitely going through everything with a fine-tooth comb, like what part of my shipment is dutiable, at what rate is it dutiable. In some cases, still looking for different sourcing solutions so that they can avoid the China tariff. So there's still a lot of explanation involved. We are a smaller brokerage. That's the main way we try to have an advantage so that people get a better understanding of all of those aspects of importing. I like staying busy because I don't want to sit around, you know, looking for something to do. I've never had to do that here, and it's just gotten busier. It makes life interesting. Chaos is something I could do without with the pandemic. But yeah, I do like the busyness. The pandemic and the total chaos can go away, though.
Yeah, same. Gretchen Blau, our customs broker friend in Erie, Pennsylvania. Crazy as this sounds, we're kind of heading into the home stretch of summer. Kids are going to start heading back to school in a couple of weeks. Labor Day is around the corner, and a lot of us are squeezing in some last-minute vacations. And about that, the vacations, this. With so many international travel restrictions still in place, domestic travel has been booming. Great for tourist destinations, right? Cape Cod, for instance, has been packed. But as Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports for businesses out on the Cape, you can have too much of a good thing.
In the summer on Cape Cod, pretty much everything is open 7 days a week. Restaurants, shops, bike rental places.
It's a golden rule. You're always open 7 days a week, and you get as much staff as it takes to be open 7 days a week.
Peter Noble runs Idle Times Bike Shop, which has a few locations, and he says demand for rentals this year has been way up.
Baskets, helmets, locks.
Helmets, locks, yes.
But he says it's been really hard to find enough staff. So hard that he had to break the rule and keep one of his shops in Wellfleet closed 1 day a week.
That's the first time that's ever happened in the history of our business.
Lots of businesses all around the Cape are closed 1 or 2 days a week this year, or have limited hours. There are help wanted signs everywhere.
I think, you know, maybe we had a false sense of hope and expectation that after 2020, it would be smooth sailing, and it's still challenging.
Tracy Barry Hunt owns a restaurant called Winslow's Tavern in downtown Wellfleet.
I think I'll have the BLT.
Sure. Would you like that with fries or a salad?
Finding enough wait staff and kitchen staff has been one of the biggest challenges for Barry Hunt this summer, but not the only one.
The supply chain is huge. We have a major vendor who just completely pulled the plug. They don't have delivery out here.
Food costs are up significantly. So are labor costs. Most businesses on the Cape have raised wages this year. At Winslow's, from the $14, $15 an hour range to the $18 to $20 an hour range. And so, Barry Hunt says, she's also raised prices.
And some guests don't understand that.
She says some guests also don't understand why Winslow's isn't doing oyster happy hour every day anymore.
It's a beautiful day. Why can't I get oysters right now? Well, the bartender's on a break. We're not doing it this year. Noticing that we're not serving until 9:30. And why? Why can't I have dinner at 9:30?
Almost every restaurant and business, it seems, is understaffed this year. At the same time, there are more tourists on the Cape than ever. Mac Hay owns Mac Seafood, which includes a bunch of restaurants and fish markets, plus a motel. And in past years, he says, the motel would normally be around 75 to 85% full in the summer months.
This year, we're hovering in the 97 to 100% occupancy rate, so we're booked for the rest of the summer. We've never, ever seen that before.
And at his restaurants, the volume of customers coming through is up 30 or 40% over 2019.
So we've got a Hollywood special, a jerk burrito, refried beans and two lemonades. Are those for here to go?
At Max on the Pier in Wellfleet, customers stand in line to order from a window and eat at picnic tables in the sand on the harbor.
We can't be in the sun, Brady.
Order number 10.
Standing in line has always been part of the experience here. But in past summers, Hay says,
we used to be at peak volume for like an hour and a half. And now we're at peak volume for 5 hours. Every day is a busy Saturday.
It's so busy so often at all five of his restaurants that there comes a point pretty much every night now where they just have to cut off online orders and stop answering the phone, something that used to happen maybe once or twice a year.
It's really a rare phenomenon that we're going through, and it's good in some ways, but it's also incredibly stressful in other ways.
Customers, for the most part, he says, have been great, patient, understanding, aware of at least some of the challenges.
I get asked probably 40 to 50 times a day how things are going. And they all want to know how is the staffing issue. And I say we're in great shape where we have just enough workers, but just enough is not enough.
And that's just enough for now. A lot of those workers are high school and college students who will be heading back to school in a few weeks. And if this fall is anything like last fall, the tourists will keep coming. On Cape Cod, I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, a quick Olympics update and a gender pay equity update all in one. And I will pause here briefly for a spoiler alert break talking women's soccer scores. Just waiting. Hang on. Okay. So the U.S. women's team beat the Netherlands today on a penalty kick shootout. The semis are Monday. That is the sport. The pay equity thing is this. We have told you the women's team is suing U.S. Soccer, the governing body, for pay discrimination. They have lost the first round. The women have. The case is currently on appeal. Here, though, is the news. The men's national team has filed a brief in support of the women, saying in relevant part that U.S. Soccer, and here's the quote, and remember, this is the men saying this, has persistently treated the women as second class throughout the 35-year history of the women's national team. So there you go. All right, we got to go. Here is your moment of economic context. It's a quickie just because somebody's got to keep track. To the list of companies requiring workers to be vaccinated, add Disney. All salaried and non-union employees have 60 days to get it done. They're in talks with the unions about the rest of the workers. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.